This is a Stand Up New York Labs production, providing you podcasts since 2013.
Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
Yo, this is In the Conversation. This is Ali Muhammad. Happy New Year to all the conversationalists out there. Of course, with me leading off the conversation, you already know D Lemon is on the road. He's in Atlantic City, I think, doing shows. And so I'm home alone, but I'm not alone, of course. You know what I'm saying? We always have interesting conversations when D is out. And this week, we got a friend of mine. His name is Terry Corbett. He's like what do they call those? Altiers? A super stylish, bespoke tailor to the rich, famous, and otherwise. A connoisseur of culture. And we're producing a show together that will, you know, will come together sometime this year. So, Terry Corbett, can you talk to us for a second? Let them know who you are. Let them hear how you sound.
What's up? What's up? What's up? Check the mic. 1, 2. Check the mic. I'm in the house.
That's what we going with.
We going with 1980s Run DMC.
Oh, okay, okay. Let them know. Let them know where that come from. Let them know how you came up with that.
Oh, man, it's just in the genes, man.
Man, tell them that story you just told me.
What's up,
man? The Home Depot story.
Oh, my gosh, man. So I'm in high school, man. It's like maybe like around, I want to say 82. I don't know. I had 13 W-2s that year. So, you know, it was real ugly for me. So my mom wasn't really happy at all. But I get a job at Home Depot. And this at the time with Home Depot, it wasn't as fancy as it was today. You know, Home Depot, they were still trying to get them getting their legs up under them and understand the market. And so therefore, Home Depot, you know, most of the stuff is kind of like a bodega in New York City. Nothing has prices on it. So if you come to New York City, you'll know exactly what I'm saying. So I used to, probably one of the only young African-Americans that was at the cash register. And so I used to have to call and ask for a price check. And I don't know why they gave a 15, 16-year-old, after listening to Run DMC and Rakim coming up in that, Run DMC and Beastie Boys coming up in that time, being birthed on that music. I don't know why they gave me the mic, Ali.
Yeah. So how the mic check, how the price check go?
Oh, my gosh. So the price check would start like this. Yo, 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 yo. Check the mic, 1, 2, check the mic. Check the mic, 1, 2, check the mic. I need a price check.
What'd your boss say about that?
He just shake his head, man, because I was the only one that would show up and work hard and work all day and work all night, man.
I need the money.
I was in the projects, man. So.
No doubt. I did a rough introduction on what you do and, you know, and who you are, but let them know what you do and who you are, because I know you have a more detailed and more sophisticated way of presenting what you do.
Wow, that's man. When you leave that up to me with any parameters, I begin to ramble, and I do not want to bore you out there. I'm just a regular dude. Right?
Give us the 1-2-1-2 version.
Grew up in St. Petersburg, Florida, in Bethel Heights. St. Petersburg is across the bridge from Tampa. Most people know Tampa. But I'm here to put St. Pete on the map. We call it the Berg. If you went to FAMU, you know about the Berg, right?
Yeah. You know, you got Will Packer. You got what's her name? Yeah. Auntie. Yeah. What's her name?
Yeah, Will Packer ain't trying to cut me no checks right now, and I'm from the same hometown. Will, can I make a suit for you, man? What's going on, man? Come on, I'm gonna step your game up, man.
And you got Angela Bassett.
Yeah, Angela Bassett. Actually, Angela Bassett grew up in Jordan Park. Let me explain Jordan Park to you, America. Actually, I'm sorry. Ali's a global kind of dude. So I'm speaking to all different markets in all parts of the world, right?
No doubt.
So let me explain to you the world of Jordan Park, right? Imagine Cabrini Greens. Imagine all of Crenshaw, all of East St. Louis. Imagine, what's that rough area in Miami, man?
There's plenty of them. I mean, Overtown.
Overtown, there you go. Yeah, imagine Overtown, and all of this is within about a small projects, right? So everything and anything went down in Jordan Park. So for Angela Bassett to make it out of Jordan Park, trust me, I don't know who you are, who's listening, where you from, what you dealing with, whether you believe in yourself or whether you don't believe in yourself. Understand something. If Angela Bassett can come from Jordan Park and get to the level that she's at right now, anything is possible.
No doubt. Yeah. So, what was the name of your park? You was, what'd you say, what was the name of your neighborhood?
I was in Bethel Heights, man.
And what was your projects called?
My projects, man, it wasn't really all that tough, man. And nobody took your sneakers or anything like that. You have to just man up every now and then. Even when you're 10, 11 years old, you got to get into a fisticuffs or whatever. But it wasn't Jordan Park. I'm just trying to keep it real with you.
Right. But you came up out of St. Pete, right? You know, and you came up what, on the clothes? What you came up? What was your first big ventures?
Well, when I was very young, I used to play Pop Warner, right? So I played football. Football, I was quarterback. Basketball, I played point guard. Baseball, I played. I was a pitcher. I was shortstop. And so, at a very young age, I was extraordinarily popular. And what happened was that now I'm about 11, 12 years old, and because I'm so popular,
extraordinarily popular.
Beyond that, I'm a living fucking legend. Okay. So I'm extraordinarily popular as a 12-year-old. So obviously at 12-year-old, you know what I'm saying? Now you want to start taking a bath every day, right? You want to smell good. You know, you start looking at the ladies and everything. But the thing about it was that, I grew up in the projects. My father was gone. My mother was just trying to do the best that she can. And I this has nothing to do with it, but hopefully you can understand. I became very aware of myself, meaning that of what I didn't have. So I didn't really feel that good about myself. So the first thing that I thought about was, you know what? I want to learn modeling because I associated clothing with modeling. So now, here it is, the world. I love saying America, but I'm going to say the world because I'm sitting with Ali Muhammad.
Who's extraordinarily popular, you know.
Right, and he does things very, 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 very big. Very big, very big.
Come on, man. Let's get with it.
So I joined this modeling troupe. I can't remember the ladies' names, but it ain't the type of modeling that you think, America. It wasn't, I wasn't doing Sears and Roebuck, right? We're at the... we're performing at the local rec centers and we're performing, in people's backyard. We would, get dressed up, and she would show us how to model and so what have you. So, but there's a problem, right? I'm 12 years old. I don't have any money. As a matter of fact, I think back to this day of where I've come from. And I literally had to go to school to eat. That's how poor we were. And so I didn't have any money. But I had to secure clothing to model. So what I found out was that at that time, see now you guys call them thrift shops or consignment shops. We called them flea markets, right? So I used to be able to go in at 12 years old and cop a Gucci blazer for like $3 because I'm down in Florida, right? Like $3, mm-hmm. A shirt for 98 cents. I know y'all can't even believe that, right? Now it led to another problem, and guess what it was? The shit was too big for me. I was 12 years old. So, Ali, what do you think the solution was, man?
I don't know. All right. If it was me, I would have been wearing it like a cape.
No, I couldn't wear that shit.
Like a ghost.
So what I did was I didn't have enough money to take it to a tailor, even though I didn't even know what the fuck a tailor was. Excuse my French. So I began to take this stuff apart at 12 years old with a needle and thread and figure out how to tailor it for myself.
So you was on some real life Gordon Gartrell shit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how I started. And then I matriculated. Years later, I ended up moving to Atlanta, and I was working at an investment firm called AG Edwards, and I realized that the corporate world wasn't for me, and I decided that I was going to take some tailoring courses. I took tailoring courses from an African dude named Joseph. I can't think of his name right now. He was very instrumental in my life, as many others. I always give credit when credit's due. And I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but in the 90s, one of the most popular outfits to wear was the hoodie and the sock hat with the tie. Y'all remember that?
Yeah, yeah. The hip-hop, you know, yeah. Naughty by Nature.
There you go.
Tie up at the top.
There you go.
Who had? Kark and I had one. Cross Colors had some.
There you go. There
all
you
that
go.
Shit.
Yeah.
What about it?
Absolutely. So, I told my girlfriend at the time, and my wife has been with me from day one. I think this is 29 years now we've been together. So,
damn.
Yeah.
Y'all love us.
You can call it that. So, but my wife, I love her. She's had my back, and I don't know what I would be without her. So I have to say that.
The tie-up hats.
Yeah. So, fast forward. So, here's the thing. So, I hated it at AG Edwards, and the corporate world was just wasn't for me. They recognize when you get a haircut. They recognize when you have a new pair of shoes. They recognize everything. There's always with games within games. I'm not with this, right? So I was in the mall one day at Lenox Mall in Atlanta, Georgia, and I saw a beautiful shirt, and the shirt was very expensive. Now, mind you, this is 80. I moved to Atlanta in 89, so AJ was 90. So 1990, the shirt was $300. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? I can make this shit. So that precipitated me by taking sewing courses. Actually, my first sewing course was Jabri. Jabri's no longer here. Beautiful gentleman. He died very early on. So I decided that I was going to make my own clothing. So within 3 months, I decided to leave this amazing job at AG Edwards. I was training to be a broker, by the way. So your boy's kind of sharp, right? But I realized that life wasn't for me. So I opened up a shop at Greenbrier Flea Market. I put a sewing machine in there, and I was sewing hoodies and sock hats.
So, the tie-up sock hats.
Yeah.
You mentioned it.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned it again.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you saying that you created the sock hat?
No, I didn't create the sock hat.
So, where did you see the sock hat?
I believe I saw it on a hip-hop video.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved what it represented. It represented our culture. I felt in some way that it also represented our ancestry,
mm-hmm.
right? So it had multiple meanings to me. But here's the thing, right? So I open up at Greenbrier Flea Market, right? Mm-hmm. Right across from Greenbrier Mall at the time. My first customer was Rico Wade and Pat Sleepy Brown from Organized Noise. My first customer.
That's a good customer.
Right.
And they was cracking.
This
was before they was cracking.
Not at the time. This is around 93, 94, because Outkast came out in 95, I believe. 94, 95.
94, like, I think.
94, right? So.
Yeah. 90. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I meet Rico. Rico, forgive me. Please forgive me, Rico. Rico. Hey, man. Hey, man, we got this group, man. We signed with LaFace Records, man. L.A. Reid, man. I said, yo, I make clothes. I do music as well. And Rico's like, hey, man, you got to come by. So Rico going to kill me. Rico. So my brother to this day, we don't talk. Mm-hmm. And the reason we don't talk, and this is a whole nother level, this is a whole nother story, is that I credit Rico with everything that I've gotten this point in life. And we don't speak. And the only reason that we don't speak is because my whole dream was to come back and give him a check for $1 million, and I don't have $1 million yet. So he doesn't know this, but that's the only reason. And I'm about ready to cry. I'm sorry.
He know it now.
But He doesn't even know that. That's the reason I don't really stay in touch, because my whole thing was about I got to come back and bless the people that gave me life. So at any rate, so Rico Wade and Pat Sleepy Brown and Ray Murray, that's the trilogy from Organized Noise. Mm-hmm. So they invited me to the dungeon, and guess what, y'all? I'm sitting in the dungeon in Rico's mom's basement, right? And I'm listening to the unfinished Southern Playalistic Cadillac music. And that's where I met everyone. Mm-hmm. And within about 6 months to a year, Rico introduces me to LaFace Records, L.A. Reid, right? Babyface was, I think he was in L.A. at the time or whatever. But L.A. is running LaFace Records. And I began, so Rico was responsible for not only introducing me to just Outkast. I think Big Boy bought some stuff for me. Andre was on his own vibe. He didn't really do anything. And I love Andre, very, 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 very amazing talent. And then I ended up doing, I actually made CeeLo's first suit. Mm-hmm. And it was a very unfortunate incident. CeeLo's mom passed. He asked me to make him his first suit. CeeLo was in Goody Mob. They hadn't even come out yet. And extraordinarily talented. America, you have no idea what you're missing right now. I'm sorry, Ali. This man can sing his ass off. He can sit there at the piano and he can play. Don't get this rap shit twisted. CeeLo is one of the most amazing artists I've ever heard in my life. CeeLo really is like Al Green, man. And I know you should never put a young artist with an old artist, but that's what I think of when I think of CeeLo's voice. Anyway, so because of my hard work and talent, but also because of Rico and Pat, Rico introduced me to L.A. Reid from LaFace, and think about this, Ali. Within 6 months to a year, Usher was very young at the time. I think he had just finished his first album because Puffy did his first album.
Right.
I don't call him Diddy. Puffy to me. So Puff had did his first album. It didn't get the sales they want. But anyway, Usher used to come by my apartment and just hang out, just unannounced. CeeLo used to come by.
I remember Usher in the sock hat.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You made that?
I don't remember. Back then, I was rolling. I really was. So
with these artists, you are making clothes.
Yeah.
What type of, like, yeah, for videos or just for life? How's it working?
For the everyday life as well as for the videos. Like, there's at least two or three videos I did for Society of Soul, which is Sleepy Brown's project. Mm-hmm. I did the styling for several projects for Goody Mob. I never styled an Outkast video. Mm-hmm. At that point, they had their own vibe, right, and it wasn't for me. But I also worked with Tony Rich, who was a huge artist at the time for LaFace Records.
Right.
I even did some stuff with TLC. That was on their first album. That was before they even blew up.
They had the sock hat too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I didn't understand, and I really wish I had had a mentor or a father or something to tell me of the situation I was in. Because for me at that particular time, I took everything as, it's like I'm going to get the mail. It was commonplace for me.
But you was young. That's what.
Yeah, I was very young.
You know what I'm saying? Talent is wasted on the youth.
Yeah, absolutely. 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 So that's kind of how I got my start. And then, you know, that ended up matriculating into, I'll never forget, I was at Rico asked me to meet him at Patchworks. Bob Whitfield, who used to play for the Atlanta Falcons, who was married to Sheree Whitfield from the
Housewives.
Atlanta Housewives. Mm-hmm. He had a studio called Patchworks.
Yeah, it was a label first.
Yeah, he had Razzcast signed.
He had another cat, Mean Green.
That's, yeah, Mean Green. Yeah, I like Razzcast though. Yeah, she had the nipples the size of silver dollars. I'll never forget that line. Ooh. Right there. That,
oh, Razzcast.
That's what Razzcast said. Oh, okay. Razzcast right. is a beast.
So Bob Whitfield had Patchwork, and then when he built the studio, it was one of the most advanced studios in the South.
In the South. Right. Bob did an amazing job. And now Kurt bought it from him. Kurt was his business partner. No, Kurt worked for him at the time. Kurt went to Michigan State. He also played with, I think he played at Michigan State with a former client of mine who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers named Myron Bell. Hmm. So, but now Kurt actually bought it from Bob, and now he's running it. But here's the thing. So I was at Patchworks one night with Rico, and they're working on some new shit. I want to say it was a remix for Brian McKnight or whatever. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was a remix for En Vogue, Don't Let Go, which became a fucking huge fucking monster hit. And Rico had on a red suit that I'd made, and Bob used to clown me all the time. He would never give me a shot. And I'm like, yo, like, I make what the client wants. That's what I do. I'm a custom clothier.
Right.
You know, I do bespoke in the truant sense. And I don't apologize for that, you know, nor should I, Ali. So
I didn't ask you to.
So I met Bob, and that's kind of how I transitioned from doing music to professional athletes. So because of Bob, and because of Kurt, I ended up doing the Atlanta Falcons, Cincinnati Bengals, Cleveland Browns, Atlanta Falcons, New York Jets. And what have you.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're making clothes, mm-hmm. right? And you got some clients and shit. Mm-hmm. What is your philosophy on what you're doing? Not who you're doing it for, but the actual work that you're putting in.
If I was, you know, Ali, and that's a really good question, and I try and tell young guys all the time, I don't mentor many, but the ones that I can, I try and you know, give them as much of insight from my experiences in this business. The most important thing that you could do as a designer, whether you're doing bespoke or you're doing custom, you're sewing from your home, it doesn't matter. It's all the same. Product is product. Is understand your customer. Understand your customer. You know, you have to understand their lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? You have to understand, you know, what they eat, what they drink, the chicks they date. If they got a wife, you meet the wife. If they got a jump off, you got to understand the jump off, because the jump off is having them introduce him to, you know, to different music. Mm-hmm. So therefore, he's gonna move different. He's gonna dress differently, right? You got to know what he eats. You know, what does he eat for dinner? How often does he travel? Where does he travel? Now, everything that I'm telling you right now, it helps you make more money, and I'll tell you why. When you understand everything that is about your client, you become so, I wish my vocabulary was as great as Ali the world.
Just lay it out there,
yeah.
Mike.
Yeah.
Because, you know what I'm saying, when I get to that point, I just cuss. I just say, shit, motherfucker, right. Or know what I'm saying. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Everybody who listens knows that.
So I would say this, that it's very, so when you understand your whole client's lifestyle, not only can you provide a better service and more service, but you can make more money. Because if I know that Ali Muhammad, every August, the first week, he goes to Martha's Vineyard.
For Black Illuminati Week?
Not Illuminati week.
That's what I call it.
Right? Right. He goes the first week. Second week is when everybody comes, right? Mm-hmm. But if I know that the weather at Martha's Vineyard is about 78 degrees, and I know that they always have a party on Wednesday at Lola's, which has now been sold, right? Mm-hmm. And that it's an all-white party. Now, I can sell Ali more clothing. You see how this works? The more you know about your client, the better service that you can offer them.
So you're just assuming that I'm going to need more clothes.
Absolutely.
For the white party and Lola's and shit.
Well, Lola's just got so Brett Wright, who's an amazing Brett Wright and Lynn Burnett, who owns Uptown Magazine. Mm-hmm. They have been doing their thing now at the Vineyard, and they do an amazing event. And so because they've taken over now, BET is kind of went left. Mm-hmm. So now Brett and Lynn are doing amazing events, and they're great guys. And
so what that had to do with Lola being sold?
Well, everyone has pretty much have their events at Lola.
Okay.
Right. So Lola got sold.
So the new owner not going to do the events?
It's up in the air right now. So there's other amazing events.
See, this cough talk, y'all. This cough talk. Yeah. See, yeah. He done went all the way off into a whole nother level of, you know what I mean, of society.
Right.
You know what I mean? Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Now, you know it's going to be a white party and your client is going to be in that general area or right. that, you know that they're going to be there.
Right.
You're saying that to get ahead of the curve, you could already what?
To offer him better service. I already know that there's a white party in August. So therefore, I can
give him some white options.
I can text him and says, "Listen, I can text him 2 or 3 months prior and say, listen, I'm putting together your clothing for the Vineyard." Mm-hmm. You see how that works?
And then he like, "Damn, man, you be thinking."
Absolutely. But really, I'm in his pockets.
See, that's rich nigga shit. See, me, I'd be like, "Burr, what was you thinking?"
Yeah.
Because I'm going to go with this shit I got right here.
right? yeah. So, but now, I want to say something, Ali.
You know, say it.
If you ratchet.
I ain't ratchet.
Here's the thing.
At all.
You ain't welcome at the Vineyard. This is some sophisticated shit right here.
Well, you talking to the wrong motherfucker, man. You talking to the wrong. Now, I ain't ratchet by nobody's stretch of the imagination. But at the same time, I'm not, you know, whatever on the other side either. But what I do know about me, you know, Ali can go wherever.
Yeah.
And figure it out. You know what I'm saying? Ali is not extraordinarily popular. But Ali is extraordinarily adaptable.
Absolutely. And that's all we asking, right?
And when I move into space, I'm going to be there.
Yeah, I'm just saying, the Vineyard ain't for little Shug. You know what I'm saying?
no doubt. For what you're doing, you got to do it. You know what I'm saying?
No, listen, man. I'm just a kid from the projects, man. I'm just a kid from the projects, from humble beginnings.
You can't take it back there now, but we already over the edge.
Listen, Ali. I'm a kid from the projects with humble beginnings. Let this cashmere shit I wear every day fool you.
No doubt, but we already on cashmere, man.
Right.
So let's keep it cashmere.
Let's keep it cashmere,
because you done told me I can't come to the Vineyard because I'm ratchet.
No, you can't. No, you ain't. Listen. Listen, man. Listen, Ali, we in America deserve, right, to go to a place and listen to some fucking Franklin Beverly and Mays, some Gregory fucking Porter, some Alicia, what's my girl? I can't even think of her name right now. Alicia Keys a little bit too young. You know, we trying to keep this shit real.
Yeah, but what we want to do really though.
Anita Baker, that's what I meant to say. Anita Baker, Layla Hathaway.
Anita retired.
My guy seen her last show. So we might bring her back.
But what we want to do here in the conversation is create a bridge from over there in Cashmere World to, you know, how do we connect the cat from the projects that's halfway in between where he from and the land of Cashmere?
Here's the thing. And the first word that I thought of, and it may be the wrong word, is respecting protocol. Right? Mm-hmm. Right? Just because you do something in one community doesn't mean it's acceptable in another community, right? So as long as, you know, it's kind of like this, right? When I was growing up, and let's say a young lady or young man walked into the room with a bunch of adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
He'd make acknowledgement. He'd acknowledge everybody in the room, mm-hmm. and he sat silent. And he sat silent because what he was doing was he was letting the elders know that he has a level of respect for them and that he didn't speak until spoken to,
mm-hmm.
right? So what I mean is that when you go into a different environment, you know, like I'll give a perfect example. I live in, you and I both live in Bed-Stuy, right?
Stuyvesant Heights.
Right.
No, I'm
right.
just playing.
Stuyvesant Heights, right. Yeah.
I'm just
yeah.
bullshit.
The property value done went up.
I'm just bullshit. We in Bed-Stuy.
Very, very nice.
Continue.
Right? Okay. So now, Stuyvesant Heights is being gentrified, right? So now, we have people that I'm going to say that are non-African-American, right? Right. I'm not trying to mess up your sponsorship money, Ali.
Come on, man, right. with the conversation.
Right. Okay. So they move into the community, right? And every 4th of July, every summer, we block off the streets and we have a block party. And we play the music. And
Every weekend, to be, you know, perfectly right. fair, every week right. during the summer between, you know, Memorial Day and about the middle of September,
yeah,
there's a block party, you know, on a few different blocks every week.
Absolutely.
So every block has their block party.
Yeah. Every block has their block party. Everybody, they brings out a DJ. They bring out stuff for the kids. Everybody gets in their front yard, and they burn their chicken.
And they block the street off. They right. have a great time. It's a historical event Absolutely. That has been going. Yeah. And that, you know, from my own point of view,
right.
It retains the culture of the community.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It is the one thing I think that I could attribute it to. It's one of the reasons that people don't just move out as fast.
Absolutely.
Because there's such culture and legacy in these communities. And the block party is one of the ways that the people who live in these communities get to express it, see everybody, you know. Yes, they gonna barbecue in the street. They're going to about to do the bouncy house. They're going to have a DJ. But it's their way of okay, welcome to my block.
Right.
And every block has one. So you can go through the whole summer. If you're from Bed-Stuy and you kind of know people throughout the neighborhood, you can go from block to block to block all summer long and kick it every weekend, Saturday and Sunday.
Absolutely. No doubt. Every weekend. The whole street is blocked off, right? It's, you know, people plan a whole year,
mm-hmm.
right? They invite family, they invite friends from work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's really a community event, right? Of the people that's from Bed-Stuy, right?
Right.
So back to the point. So these people have been doing this for probably hundreds of years, right?
At least 60s.
Right. So now, I have a guy that comes in, and he's from Greece, right? And he bought a brownstone. And at 9 o'clock, he's like, fucking turn the music off. What the fuck, man? I'm fucking trying to sleep. I gotta fucking work tomorrow.
You live on your block?
Yeah. It's been gentrified, right? Mm. And I'm like, listen, don't come to somebody else's fucking community, right? You have to understand the complexity of this community, and you have to understand that these people have been doing this. As Ali said, 60 to 100 years. This is what they've been doing. So don't come and bring your own mindset of how you think things that should be done when these people have been doing it. And that's what I mean about the venue. You can't come there sagging your fucking pants. You're not fucking welcome.
Right.
Just real talk. You got to understand the protocol.
But with the Greek dude, right?
Right.
The thing about it is he could cry. He yeah. could complain.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is that shit is gonna happen.
Absolutely.
And he just that's the breaking point. That's like right. you know, most times you can come into a community and call the police and all that right. shit, but it don't really work like that.
It don't work like that.
You know what I'm saying? And that's one thing that I'm really proud about Bed-Stuy is that, you know, it's not one of those easy takeovers. It's like you say gentrified, but really, you know what I mean, it's still holding tight.
Right,
you know,
absolutely.
My block is probably 80% of the same people who was on my block when I moved on my block 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And when new people come into the community, what happens is, you know, the community is our best. I had already had its own culture, its own, you know, way of doing things, its own pride, very proud. So when newcomers come in, you know, you'll meet them and that first day be on their own, you know, whatever. I'm going to try to push everything into my direction, but it don't work. So what happens is most people end up blending into what's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The guy you met, you know, 5 years ago that moved in thinking it was going to be a takeover now is, you know, giving you the black man dap and hug, you know what I mean? And is at the block party and contributing to the block party in a way that he already knows, okay, this is how it goes down, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
So that's one thing about Brooklyn that at least in Bed-Stuy, that I really appreciate.
I do, too. I really appreciate it. But, you know, both of us travel a lot when we go all over the world, right?
Right.
There's nothing better than meeting different people and experiencing their culture and understanding of how they do things and why they do it. That's so fascinating to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, absolutely. So, but anyway, so Ali took me, it took 20 minutes to get back to this point. Don't be bringing your ratchet ass to the venue.
But nobody said they was bringing their ratchetness to the venue.
I'm just trying to say this, man.
I'm just saying. Nobody assumed that they was coming to the venue to be ratchet.
I'm just trying to say
who,
this.
Are you talking to me?
Listen.
Are you saying that Ali will come to the vineyard and sully the environment?
Absolutely not. I know you a man
of
distinction. You're a gentleman and a scholar.
I don't even understand how we even had to go there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm almost disrespected and appalled that you even thought to take it there in regards to me and moi. Matt, do you think that Ali Muhammad would go and sully the environment?
I think you make any environment better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you know I'm not extraordinarily popular.
No, you're very popular.
But what I am, you know, what people do understand, that I have an energy of upness. You understand? And and that is created.
Yeah.
Here by my peers have deemed that, you know, Ali Muhammad will float in the energy of upness.
Yeah.
And that's what I would do. So I wouldn't assume that I would come to the vineyard and sully it up. Is that your opinion of me?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You came to my home.
I'm just saying.
Ali.
I'm just listening.
You know, it really warmed my heart. I actually texted my wife about this, and we had a long conversation about it.
What'd you text your wife about?
Right. You know, we had a meeting. Ali told me he was going to come to my house, world, about 9:30 a.m. this morning. Now, Ali's an artist, so I know that means 9:45, right? Right. So he shows up.
I really don't appreciate the level of disrespect that you come on my show and bring.
This
is a totally outrage.
Right.
Security? Well, get this.
So world, listen to this. So he shows up about 9:45, right? And I knew, right? I woke up late. I was at Stanford Cigar Lounge, John Stark's Cigar Lounge in Stanford, Connecticut. And I got like 2-3 hours sleep, but I knew I had another 15 minutes because I knew Ali was going to get there at 9:45, right? So, but here's the thing, right, which I give this guy so much credit for. He shows up at 9:45, right? You know.
Yeah, I don't think it was.
No, my doorbell don't work, right?
I'm gonna tell you.
I'm
exactly
bougie, but I'm not rich, right?
Okay. It was 9:38, motherfucker.
9:30. Okay, right.
You on my show lying and
so
shit.
So he shows up, right? And this is what he does. I want you listen. I want you to listen to every word.
I'm listening. Right?
So he takes off these dirty ass sneakers.
Damn.
Before he goes into my home, he puts him to the side. And I was like, my knuckle.
Nigga.
He understands this shit. He understands how this shit works. He takes off his sneakers. He walks into my home barefooted. And I'm like, no, he had on socks. And they were very, very clean because he's a good dude, right? So, but just the fact that he thought of me this much, that he would take off his shoes, to come into my home. He came into my castle. Right? Because I'm a king, right? I got a king and a queen and a princess, right? So he came into my home. He took off his sneakers He left him in the doorway. And see, that's what I'm saying, right? He understands protocol, right? He understands he came into Terry Corbett's castle, and he took off his shoes, and he walks in, right? And here's the best thing, right? He didn't ask me to use the bathroom. He didn't ask me for no glass of water. He didn't ask me for no coffee. He was like, hey, man, I love you, man. I'm just here to support, man. You can't make this shit up, man.
So, again, I don't understand why the level of disrespect has to be so high, thinking that I would come. I didn't even ask to come to the venue. So I don't even know how I got involved with Sully in the venue's name. But anyway, Mr. Corbett.
Yeah. What up, man?
So I had a meeting with Mr. Corbett this morning.
Absolutely.
He was going to design and create a custom, what do you call it, top coat?
It's called a top coat. It's what you wear in the wintertime that's over your clothing that's actually, it keeps you warm. It's a tailored piece, right?
No, very tailored. It's very tailored. And I ain't had no tailored piece since the 80s. Bespoke,
right. And you know, and here's the thing, right? I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida, right? And growing up, I've always had an appreciation from people that are from the bottom.
And that means Miami.
Listen.
Because when you talk about Florida,
look, this
there's the bottom, right. And then there's the rest of Florida.
Right.
So Miami.
It's the bottom. Right. If you have to have listened to Luke Skywalker's first album to understand. We call Miami, right? In certain places, we call it the bottom, right? It's the bottom of Florida, right?
No doubt. And you know, when you think about, you know, the news stories that come out of Florida, you know, Florida man this and, you know, Florida woman did that, that's mostly outside of Miami.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Miami is Miami, and then the rest of Florida is another country.
Yeah.
It's
another country.
A different country.
Yeah.
But
I have a very, very funny story to tell you guys, if I can get it in before this, before we go out.
No, I mean, we're here, man.
We're 44 minutes, right?
We are here. Right. Why are you worried about the time?
All right. So here's the thing, right? So this is probably the funniest shit that's ever happened to me, right? So here's the thing, right? So I have a bit of ADD, right? Especially when I drink water. So here's the thing. So I had made clothing for a group that Rico produced and Ray and Sleepy Brown produced called Mister. They had a smash hit called Blackberry Molasses.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's the backstory, right? I'm gonna tell you the backstory first, right? I'm sitting at the dungeon with Rico Wade, right? Now Rico is in between deals with LaFace Records, right? So Silvio Rohn is pitching him. And Jimmy Iovine, who he eventually ended up signing with, right,
mm-hmm.
is pitching him, and L.A. is pitching him, right? So, in this song, Blackberry Molasses, the biggest star in the world at that point was George Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Rico played me a voice recording of George Michael saying, yo, man, I need this song, bro. I need this song, bro. Blackberry Molasses.
And George Michael said, bro.
Well, he didn't say bro.
I know. But the sentiment was bro. Yeah,
absolutely.
No doubt.
He needed a song. He needed this
record.
Right. Now, here's the thing. Most people don't understand. Rico was 24, 25 years old at the time. You don't understand. Nine Inch Nails is calling. George Michaels is calling. What's your boy from England? Phil Collins is calling.
Right.
The biggest stars in the world are calling Rico's phone. Mm-hmm. And he's still at the dungeon living with his moms. So you got to understand something of the gravity of this. But anyway, to this day, I love this dude, man.
Yeah,
So let me explain the story, right? Right. So I make these suits for Mister. I do their album, right?
Blackberry Molasses.
Right.
Mister.
Light blue suits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, Groovy Lou bit me on Big's album when he did the light blue suit because he saw what I did for Mister, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Rico Wade.
Shout.
Now, this is about 90, I want to say 95, 96, right? Mm-hmm. So, we're coming up to, so Rico said, yo, man, hey, man, hey, hey, Vibe having a party, man. Hey, they having it in New York, man. You got to come. So, Rico, don't kill me, man, but that's really how you talk, bro.
But go ahead.
Right, right. So, I come to New York City, right? Now, mind you, I'm a young dude. I'm like 22, 23 at the time, right? Young dude, right?
Right.
Young dude, right? I just so happens that whatever it is, the creator touched me, and I was just doing some fly shit, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody had did kids 15 years old with light blue suits, white shirts.
And this was for their album or their video?
Album cover. Look it up right now.
Album cover. I'm looking at it right now.
Look it up
right now. Light blue suits.
Light blue suits, right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And blue couches.
Right. So, absolutely, right. So, this dude named Eric, he's the manager, but it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Don't even listen to it. So, good dude, but it's irrelevant. So, here's the thing, right? So, I'm up at Vibe Party, right? This is when Vibe was...
Was Vibe.
Real shit. Right. Real shit, right? This is when Quincy was behind it.
Top
like, I'm talking about,
chain.
Like, top of the food chain shit. Like, all the other magazines is bullshit compared to Vibe when they first launched. Don't get it twisted. The content was amazing, right? Mm-hmm. It had us looking like kings and queens, right? Mm-hmm. We weren't no little bees and little shooks, right? We was doing high-end shit.
Right? Right.
So here's the thing, right? So I get to this Vibe Party, right? And it's a bit overwhelming for me, right? Bit overwhelming because, again, I had...
You're from St. Pete.
Right. I'm basically a novice. I just learned the soul maybe a couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm downstairs. Now, the VIP is upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
This is where all the big hitters at, right? But again, when you don't necessarily feel that confident about yourself, you carve your own space.
Right.
So I'm downstairs. I'm ordering drinks, right? I'm Gucci, right? Right. Now, white America, that means I'm cool, right? So I'm Gucci, right? So here's the thing, right?
Right.
So Rico comes from downstairs, all animated. Rico from Organized North, right? Hey, man. Hey, man, Quincy Jones want to meet you, man. He loved them suits you did for Mister. I say, oh, shit, really? Now, I'm 23, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right, I'll be upstairs, man. Now, here's the thing, Ali. There's no fucking way I'm going upstairs. This is fucking Quincy Jones, man. This is the greatest producer in the history.
So why is it no way that you're going upstairs?
No fucking way.
You scared?
I was scared of the motherfucker.
What you scared of? You already did the work.
No.
See,
no.
America?
No.
This is what you don't do.
I was scared.
Don't be scared of the work that you already did based on, you know what I'm saying? If a motherfucker calling you about some shit you already did,
yeah.
It ain't like you asking you to do some shit you ain't never did or never seen. This about some shit you done.
Yeah. Well, before that, it was Dr. J, and we met his son. I forget his name, but he was at Morehouse, and I wouldn't meet Dr. J, right?
You didn't want to meet him either?
I didn't want to meet him either, right?
You were scared.
Scared of the motherfucker. I'm gonna admit it right now. Being a grown ass man, I was scared. The moment was, I thought it was too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
But all young people, take that shit. Take that shit.
Don't be scared.
Take that shit. Don't be scared. Make it happen.
Don't
Even
be
if
scared.
You fail, you learn from failure.
And
you only fail if you don't learn from failure.
Right, because most times you ain't gonna fail.
Right.
And see, you know what I'm saying? You go, you take the opportunity. So you were scared. You didn't go see Quincy.
No.
And then what happened?
Hold on a second. Hold on. What's your boy name right here?
That's Matt.
Matt, you not listening to this shit? Matt, you don't even seem fucking interested, man. Matt, this is a
why
great...
You,
Matt, listen to this shit, bro.
Why are you messing with Matt?
Matt, listen. Ali, listen to this shit.
Tell the story.
So here's the thing, right? So Rico comes downstairs. He said, hey, man, Quincy want to meet you, man. I'm like, all right, I'll be up in a minute. Now, here's the thing, Ali. There's no fucking way I'm going upstairs to meet Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones? Bro, that's like the music equivalent to fucking Martin Luther King.
Right.
Right? No way, right? So I say, yo, I'm coming up. Now, here's the thing, Ali. I'm straight full of shit. 30 minutes pass by. Rico comes down and says, hey, man. Hey, I told you, man. You know, Quincy want to meet you, man. He liked them suits you did for Mister. I said, I'd be right up. Right? I'm talking shit, right? Right? To other people that's around me, whatever. But in my mind, in the back of my mind, I'm like, yo, I cannot meet, pardon me, I know a lot of y'all are Christian out here, God. imagine how it is for you to meet God. That's how I felt about Quincy, right? Especially after reading his biography, right? So Rico comes downstairs again about 30 minutes. Now Rico fucking pissed off at me, right? He's like, yo, you making me look bad, basically. Hey, man, I told you, man. Come up with me right now, man. Quincy, wait for you, man. So I said, fuck, man, I got to go meet Quincy, right? I'm thinking to myself, right? I don't say Rico, right? But I'm looking like I got, like, I'm the fucking most popping dude in the world, right? So I go upstairs, right? Pardon me, Quincy. I love you, man, and I love you to beyond death, right? So pardon me this, right? Quincy is drunker than any person I've ever seen in my fucking life. He's talking about four or five people, right? He's drunk. He's drunk as fuck. You getting this, Matt? He's drunk. Ali, you getting this shit? He's drunk as fuck, right? So here's the thing, right? So I'm sitting there waiting my turn while Quincy finishes his conversation, right? And his wife, I forget her name, right? Some people say Peggy Noonan. I don't remember, right?
Peggy but, Lipton at that time?
Yeah, there you go. Lipton, right? Lipton Noonan, same shit, right? So here's the thing, right? So he's speaking, and at this point in time, after the amount of drinks that, or the amount of alcohol that he's had in his system, it's not really decipherable what he's saying, right? So she grabs his arm while he's speaking, and he's like, all right. She's like, come on, Quincy, let's go. She grabs his arm. He's like, all right. So he begins to speak. Well, he's trying to speak. Can you imagine drinking probably 50 Tiger Bombs? You can't really get a word out, right? So this is how fucked up Quincy is, right? And I'm standing there as a 23-year-old young man, right? And I'm looking at my idol. And I don't feel no way about it, because I understand we got to get nice sometime. We got to get toasted, right? Because sometimes life is just that good that we just got to get toasted, right? Right. So he begins to speak more, and she grabs his arm again in mid-sentence, and he pulls away. I said, all right, I hear. All right, we getting ready to go, right? So he begins to speak more. Then he tries to introduce himself to me, right? Pretty much how I'm slurring my words now. I've been drinking. Ali was late today, so I've been drinking since he got here, right? Before he got here. So I can't understand a fucking word he's saying. I'm not making this up, Ali. I can't understand a word he's fucking saying. And this is my idol. And you know what? I still felt no way about it. I was like, God damn, my idol drunk, but God damn, I'm riding with him, Ali. I'm riding with him, right? So he's trying to introduce himself to me and asking me for my business card, which I'm not going to give him because I'm 23, and I don't believe in myself at the time, Ali. So she grabs his arm, and lo and behold, it pisses him off. He's like, God damn it, bitch! Don't be grabbing on me! I wrote Thriller! In his most drunken state, where he don't understand where the fuck he's from or his name or where he's at, he understands I wrote the greatest selling album in the history of the world. I wrote Thriller. That's the funniest fucking story. Rico and I used to laugh this shit for a whole fucking year. And then after that, he's like, all right, yeah, let's go. And I was like, thank God I don't have to let Quincy down.
Can we pause? Nigga, we can't disrespect Quincy on my show.
Oh, I love Quincy.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I love Quincy. I'm going to tell you something, Ali. And for all the fans out there that's been following Ali, I'm going to tell you something. If you don't read any other biography, please raise Quincy. This man he's so special to every human being of what he's went through. And sometimes, because of the road that we travel, we may need a little something to help medicate us, to get us by. And so at this, so I didn't feel no way, right? Really, understand something. I didn't feel any way because I understand that we're all human beings. We're all battling and facing things that we feel that either are equivalent to us or greater than us.
Right.
So I didn't feel no way about that, you know? Go ahead. Sorry.
So tell us about the work that you do now.
Oh, well, here's the thing, right? So I do a multifaceted of things right now. So my daughter, my wife, and myself, our daughter Riley was diagnosed with autism 10 years ago. She just had a 10, had a birthday September 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about how I can help other parents and other families help kids like my daughter. Because I never want anybody to feel like I feel.
Right.
You know, I tell people all the time, I'll never be happy a day I walk on this planet. Hopefully I'll smile when I'm gone. But as a parent, to have a child with autism, and I've never had a conversation with my child, and she's 10 years old, you can't imagine how that would affect me. And so I created a organic detergent, a plant-based detergent out of Auburn Hills, Michigan, right? Made here in America. And this detergent, a large part of the proceeds give back to the autism community because I know how I feel, mm-hmm. and I want to help other parents out there, no matter the race, creed, or color, because when every parent look at their child, they want to make sure they're okay. So I created purpose detergent.
So why'd you go with a detergent?
It was very simple. I was sitting at the kitchen table with my daughter. And because of her disability, I asked my wife, I said, Audrey, I said, how many times do we wash clothes? She said, this is our third time washing clothes. I said, wow. And I said to her, third time? She says, yeah, right. So I thought to myself of how many people, what platform could I put forth that whether it's 100 years from now, 200 years from now, that people won't move on from, that there's no technology that would basically replace it, right? So my thing was is that if I can create a revenue model from detergent, right, when I'm 100 years gone, I can still be helping parents, and children and communities all over the world from creating this detergent that's giving a large part of the proceeds back to children with autism. Right. So, yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So you do the custom tailoring.
Yep.
You do the detergent, which, you know, you know, in a way that I never really thought of, kind of is still related business.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, you know, the thing about it is that I was working on the detergent in my kitchen for about 2 years. And when I'm sitting at the kitchen table, you know, with my daughter Riley, that brought it on all home as to why I was spending so much time blending. I had a lab in my kitchen at my home.
Mm-hmm.
I had been blending for 2 years. And why I was so adamant about that. I didn't realize what I was doing at the time, but I guess I call him the creator,
right,
had channeled me into doing that. So,
no doubt.
Yeah.
So with the custom tailoring, right?
Uh-huh.
Tell us about that process. You know, a lot of guys like myself, I haven't had any suits cut for me,
right,
or coats cut for me like you're doing for me now. Right. Tell us about the process and why you think it's important that guys, you know, get clothes to fit.
Well, here's the thing, right? And I tell clients this all the time. Now, mind you, I deal with a lot of hedge fund guys here on Park Avenue and Madison Avenue, some of the most wealthiest guys in the world. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. They're just like you. Right. Most of these guys come from nothing. Mm-hmm. They just ended up hitting the lottery gene, meaning that they were born with extraordinarily high IQ. Mm-hmm. But they mom and their father probably couldn't roll up two nickels together the same way our people has, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, right? So I tell guys all the time, you know, everything we do in the world right now is tribal, right? You know, whether people want to admit it or not, hopefully within the next 1,000 years or 2,000 years or 5,000 or 10,000 years, we won't be so tribal. But the whole world is tribal. Mm-hmm. You have your Dominicans, you have your Puerto Ricans, you have your Irish, you have your Indians, you have your Africans, you have your Chinese. Everyone is all sectioned off, right? So here's the thing. The thing is this, right? So when you are competing in a global market, can you afford the circumstance of not being fully prepared, right? So, and I'll put it from this perspective, Ali. So when I sit in some of the most elite rooms in the world, mm-hmm. right? Here's the thing. Most elite people, kids go to school together. Mm-hmm. Most elite people buy the same watches, or they drink the wine, or they drink the same wine, or drink the same scotch, or maybe they drink, or maybe they drive the same car, or maybe they live in, or maybe they bought homes in the same neighborhood or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So it's all very cliquish,
right?
Right. So what I'm saying is that if that is consistent with what your reality is, then I'm going to ask you the question: do you want to risk your matriculation in terms of moving forward in life? Because you're sitting across from the table from an alpha man or a Q, or I don't know about this world. It's alpha Q or Kappa, right?
What about the white people?
Right. Or I don't know their clubs and associations. I'm sorry. I'm as I said before, I'm from the projects, from Bethel Heights and St. Petersburg, Florida. Right.
So you're sitting across from a man of power.
Right. You're sitting across from a man of power, and he has 100 deals come across his table every day. Mm-hmm. He can choose from whomever. Mm-hmm. What he's looking for is someone that understands his lifestyle, and he's looking for someone that will represent what not only what he stands for and what his company stands for. So here's the thing, right? So Ali, if I'm sitting in front of, let's say for example, what's your boy, Jamie Dimon? Now I'm not saying this is the case, but I just want to give you guys.
Who that?
Jamie Dimon is the CEO of J.P. Morgan. Right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So let's say, for example, Jamie Dimon buys Savile Row. Savile Row is basically the brainchild for bespoke clothing in the world, mm-hmm. and everything came from Savile Row. Mm-hmm. Let's say, for example, Jamie Dimon.
And you know, all this time I thought it was Savile Row,
Savile Row.
But continue.
Right.
And there's probably people out there that feel me.
Right. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. Hey, tomato, tomato. It all tastes the same, right?
All right.
Depending upon.
So he buys it.
Right.
Then what?
Right. So here's the thing, right? So if you're Jamie Dimon, right? Or let's say you're L.A. Reid. Or let's say you're Puffy, right? Right? I don't fuck about the P. Diddy Puffy, right? Let's say you P. Diddy, right? And you're sitting in front of P. Diddy and you're pitching P. Diddy an opportunity that you believe. Or maybe you want the job. Right? Mm-hmm. And P. Diddy is like, you know what? Unfortunately, and this is for me, because I hate saying this shit because you guys don't, no one really knows very successful African-American brands, so I'm going to have to use a brand that's not African-American. Tom Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Diddy only wears Tom Ford, right? And you wore Brooks Brothers. Mm-hmm. Or you were J. Crew. And there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. There is nothing wrong than patronizing the business of where your salary level is at. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that.
Right.
But here's where the shit separates, right? Because we're all tribal. So Diddy is wearing Tom Ford. You're wearing J. Crew, mm-hmm. right? On a subliminal standpoint, he's looking at the buttonholes while you're pitching him on your jacket.
Right.
Right? Or he's looking at lapel. And he's like, and he's thinking in his mind, the conversation is decent, but I don't know if this guy is my kind of people, right? Mm-hmm. But I can fucking guarantee you, if you're wearing fucking Tom Ford and Diddy's wearing fucking Tom Ford, or if you're wearing something that's similar to Tom Ford, not even Tom Ford, but something similar and the buttonholes looks the same, Diddy's gonna say to you, you know what? Damn. Now, mind you, 100 deals come across his table every day. Don't get it twisted. This is not the other world. 100 great deals coming across his table every day. The man's worth a damn near $1 billion, mm-hmm. right? So he can pick and choose what deal that he wants to go with. But he's looking for someone that he relates to. So what I ask my clients is, right, do you want to be the one, right, that's going to wear Brooks Brothers suit when he's wearing Tom Ford? Because at the end of the day, what most of this shit boils down to is my kids go to this boarding school or private school. Mm-hmm. I graduated from this alma mater. I'm this Kappa Q or whatever. This is where I summer. This is my boat. I only wear Patek Philippe's. Mm-hmm. I only wear what's that cheap shit called? Breitling? Mm-hmm. Breitling. I only wear Breitling, right? At the end of the day, you need to be able to have something that you can communicate to this guy to say, yo, I'm your kind of people. And that's when they trust you. And at the end of the day, that's how the world runs, bro. Mm-hmm. That's how the world runs. So that's what we have to understand is that in order for you to close these deals, you have to find something in common. Very, very important story.
But before you get to the story, so you're saying the something in common in your world is the clothes that you make. And you make the shit in a way that can speak the language of the motherfuckers that you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So
I'll give an example, right? Wharton Business School, mm-hmm. right? Wharton Business School. They highly recommend that if you're going to go to their business school, which is one of the top business schools in the world. Am I right, Ali? I didn't go to college. I'm sorry.
I ain't go to business school.
Okay. All right. So Wharton is one of the top business
Matt
schools.
Matt says yes.
It's where allegedly Donald Trump say he graduated from, but he don't know the fucking budget. Anyway.
Right.
Sorry. That's a shout at Trump, mm-hmm. and I don't apologize. Right. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. I'm sorry. I lost my point.
Did you?
I lost my point.
I mean.
Oh, I get it. I'm talking about in terms of a relationship to the world is very tribal, right? Okay. So Wharton Business School recommends, right? Let's say you're this Jewish kid, right? That grew up in, what's the most Jewish area in America? I don't know.
Right. All I know is Williamsburg. Right. Okay. New York City.
Okay. We're going to say Williamsburg, New York City, right? They would recommend that you learn about NASCAR. And you learn everything there is to know about NASCAR. Because it's completely opposite of your lifestyle. You know why? Because in America, most of the big business is done in middle America.
No doubt.
Soybean, corn,
most
oil.
Of the people at.
Right? They're watching Duck Dynasty. They're watching fucking NASCAR. They know every NASCAR driver. So if you're this Jewish guy, right, who has an opportunity to meet some middle American guy and speak about NASCAR in depthly, guess what? there's a certain communication. Now you cross that line, and it's no different than the suit that he's that suit that Puffy's wearing and the suit that you wearing. The suit that
so now does that Jewish kid have to have on Tom Ford?
No, he does not have to have on Tom Ford. I'm only giving you an analogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that you have to have something in common. The world is tribal. So if Sean Combs is wearing Tom Ford and you're wearing something, let's say for example, Suit Supply, that's a that has certain characteristics of Tom Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Then he may ask you, "Hey man, that's pretty interesting what you have on. Where do you get that?" Right? Because it's not just about business, it's about beyond business. So if you're a Jewish guy from Williamsburg, right? Mm-hmm. And you learn about NASCAR, and you're talking to some guy about from Iowa who loves NASCAR,
mm-hmm.
you guys have something in common because you know more, you have a relationship with his culture,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's all tribal, and that's what I'm saying. Like, that's very, very important. We must begin to reach outside of our communities and learn other cultures, other languages, other customs,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it gives us an opportunity to bond with other people. Because at the end of the day, man, I'm going to the cigar lounge tonight. And mm-hmm.
And what you gonna do there?
I'm gonna smoke cigars and probably drink some expensive scotch. But that's just me.
And right? Why the cigar bar?
Because I smoke 5 cigars a day. It's a habit.
But why cigars?
It's a way for me to decompress. And it's a way for me to think about not only yesterday but today.
But
and
you
tomorrow.
Could do that at home with a cigar.
No.
So why would you do a cigar bar?
No. I'm gonna tell you something. My wife from Decatur, Georgia, she's not allowing me to smoke in her home. She'll fuck me up.
You got a backyard?
No. It's too cold outside. It's New York City right now. It's 30 degrees, America.
But tell me about the culture of cigar bars and why you deem it important to your day to day.
I would say, at the end of the day, cigar bars are not important at all. It's about who you smoke the cigars with. Like my brother here, Ali don't smoke cigars.
Mm-mm.
But if Ali were to smoke a cigar with me, it would probably enhance my life so greatly because he's a very highly intelligent person. He's worldly, he's roundly. And that I tell people all the time, as I said in Cigar Quest,
mm-hmm.
it's not necessarily where you smoke, it's who you smoke with.
Right. Right, and the cigar bars can help you curate that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So tell us about that.
Absolutely. So here's the thing, right? So a lot of the guys at cigar bars is lonely and can't get no pussy. I'm just gonna keep it real with you.
Yeah, right? Why you dissing everybody? You fucking shit.
I'm just being real with
Shots
you.
Shots fired right? across the board.
Right?
Like, can you?
Right.
So you hang out with these no pussy getting. Ass motherfuckers.
They ain't getting no pussy, America. I'm just trying to tell you.
Okay.
Ali, they ain't getting pussy, right? So a lot of these guys are not getting pussy, right? But here's the thing, though, right? But outside of not getting pussy, right? If you can't get no pussy, you have a lot of time to learn about all this other shit that's going on in the world, bro. Do you know how smart these motherfuckers they are at the fucking cigar lounge, bro? That I smoke with, bro? I can have a guy fucking tell me about Pushkin. Tell me about every fucking classical jazz great, mm-hmm. right? So you have I love this word, plethora. A plethora of conversations and a plethora of gentlemen from all different walks of life that have the opportunity, because they have no but fucking time on their hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of where they can expound upon every subject that comes to life. You know, when I leave here tonight, bro, trust me, we're going to talk about this fucking Alabama and Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Saban got his ass out coached. But I'm going to understand why. Let me see. We've been speaking an hour and 15 minutes.
Man, don't worry about how we're
going.
He got
me fucking late, right? So I'm going to go to the cigar lounge. I'm going to put in my Uber, and I'll be there within 15 minutes. And within 17 minutes, right? I'm going to learn from nothing but fucking geniuses that have nothing but time on their hands because they ain't doing nothing else with their hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're doing a lot of shit with their hands, but you get the point, right?
I don't get
the point.
Right? I don't, really.
So They're going to tell me, and they're going to break down every play, play by play, of why Alabama got their ass whooped.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right? Now, I think it's because Saban got out-coached.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. It's beyond that. And these guys know. So that's why I go to cigar lounges, right? I love to meet people from all across the world who hopefully they're in a good mood. And they're telling you about their life.
And hopefully you're in a good mood.
I'm in a fucking fantastic mood.
I can't tell.
I'm awesome. I'm awesome. Damn it. I got one beer on my side of the table and you got three cans open on your side of the table.
I mean, the people really don't really care about how many beers I drink because they hear me every week.
Yeah.
You understand?
I noticed you like IPAs. Why you don't like lagers, man?
But you can't.
You never order lager when we've been together. I love lagers, man.
Really?
Yeah, I love lagers.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I don't strictly like IPAs. You know, I'm a creature of familiarity, and I like what I like, and that's that.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing, America. I'm going to take you back, right? When I was in high school, because Ali's about the same age as me. Don't get this twisted, right?
Not really.
So now, here's the thing, right? He was drinking Mickey's and St. Ives.
Never.
I was on Bartles and James and shit. I was on some sexy shit back then.
No doubt. And
back
you, in and the you, 80s, and see, the thing is that this is why this is a conversation. See, the thing is I brought a fancy motherfucker to my table. And the fancy motherfucker told me that when you go into a place, you have to respect it. And respect the protocol and all that shit. Yeah. But then the fancy motherfucker commences to, you know, poo-pooing all over my protocol.
No, I don't poo-poo, man.
I've been poo-pooed upon.
It's all respect. I love
you know what I'm saying?
I love, man.
So what I like to stress is that on, you know, what we like to do here in this space is to find a common ground.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? A little bit of where you from.
Right.
A little bit of where we from.
Right.
A little bit of where I'm from. And we spread it around so everybody can learn about these different places and then they can make their own decisions, you know, about how to move in a room full of vultures. You understand? Because they're going to end
Jay-Z,
up in...
Yeah,
they're going to end up in the same room that you end up in. You know what I'm saying? They're going to end up at the venue, and then they got to figure out how to move. So that's why I was saying let's create the bridge, right?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much, you know, how it goes. And that's why we have these conversations so people can understand.
Here's the thing. I really don't want this to get misconstrued, right? Or, great word, discombobulated, right? Because Ali got you guys thinking that I'm on some other shit. I'm high end. Listen, I'm from the projects, man. I'm from Delta Heights.
I ain't did shit. Right? You said all. Right. You did all the talk.
Listen, man. I'm gonna tell you something, man. If you come to Bedford Stuyvesant, he's in Stuyvesant Heights. I'm in Bedford Stuyvesant. It's different. It's only a block away, but it's quite different, right? If you come to Bedford Stuyvesant, right now, I'm gonna say maybe second week of May. We're looking at about 70 degrees. You'll see a guy with a three-piece suit smoking a Cuban cigar, having a glass of wine on his stoop, right?
Yep.
And everybody that walks by will say, "What's up, Bespoke?" Right?
No doubt.
Now, I'm talking about, you know, killers. I'm talking about con men. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the rough and the best of the best.
Right.
Right? Everybody know, yo, this dude right here, Bespoke, Terry Corbett, he speak to everybody and he give them love.
Right.
And you know what? You need a sandwich? I got $5 on it. I got $3
right,
on
right,
it. Right?
Right.
Like, because I'm a man of the people, man.
But that's what I wanted you to talk about.
Do you
that's
know?
What,
did,
but that's what
did you know
that's what it is.
Did you know that Shirley Chisholm, unbossed and unbought, was on my block, bro? Shirley Chisholm, bro.
I feel you,
bro. Bro, so I'm speaking through greatness right here, man. I'm channeling this right here, man. You got these guys out. You got these people out here thinking that I'm on some other shit, man. Listen, just because I like cashmere, don't mean that I'm not cash money, man. I'm about the people, man.
Shit. Terry Corbett, man of the people.
Man of the people, baby.
Atelier, Bespoke.
Yeah.
Taylor.
There you go.
Custom made.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
Tell the people where you're going to be.
Yo, within...
Well, where they could find you?
Within 15 minutes. Tonight is Tuesday. New York City. Upper East Side. 73rd Street. 334 73rd Street between 1st and 2nd. Three doors in is Casa de Monte Cristo Cigar Lounge. I will be there.
I've been there.
No, you haven't.
I have.
No, you haven't.
I have been there. When I first moved to New York, I had my pants sagging to my knees.
Yeah.
And the guy who hired me at Vine Magazine took me there.
Yeah.
They had a box.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He Star Jones was there. She had a box.
Star Jones?
Yep.
Okay.
At the time. Yeah. And I was at the Monte Cristo.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you're dismissing me, but
what year was that?
1999. This is the first place of fly I entered.
Yeah, there you go.
You understand me?
You're right.
I mean, you could discount me. I know you there today, and I haven't been back since. Yeah. I don't have a box or none of that. That was the place that's when I arrived in New York.
You see how you fucking up my story? Listen.
It wasn't a story. You was just telling the people where you was going
to
be.
Here's the thing, America.
What
time you got, man? That's why I supposed to have been at 7 o'clock, man.
Man, it's 7:30, man.
7:30.
You ain't never late, though.
At 7:45, I will be there, America. I will be probably pouring something. Listen, I don't do anything young. I'm not R. Kelly. It got to be 21 years, right? Scotch, right? I don't do nothing young. I got 21 years, and I'm probably going to be smoking an Opus X or Patron 80, something very, very lovely. So I'm going to be signing off right here, right? Because I got to go. I've been with this guy too fucking long. I saw this guy 9:30 in the morning, and now I'm with him 7:30 at night. I got
to
go.
But see, when he told the story, it was 9:45. But
yeah,
but we gonna skip
right
over
that.
We was gonna skip over
that. No, it's 9:38.
9:38 is the actual actuality.
9:38.
So
9:38.
You know. Hey, man, it was good having you.
I love you.
And
man.
You know what I'm saying? What I'll be on the Instagram at Mr. Muhammad. You know what I'm saying? On Twitter, same thing. Yeah. And I'll be right back here next week.
Right.
In the conversation.
Right.
So don't forget to tell a friend, and even the enemy.
Right.
To get in the conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you all for joining us. See you next.
The main thing of it all is to be in the conversation.